Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
A lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop all your texts, all your voicemails there. We're going through all of your voicemails today. Matt jumped through all of your text messages on Wednesday, so we're going to clean it up, and we've got a ton. We've got about a dozen or so voicemails. We're going to try to get to as many as possible, but you can drop those at 331-979-1369. Make sure to go give our other Chicago shows a subscribe. So that's Locked On Bears with Lauren Cox. That's Locked On Cubs with Sean Sears, and now our newest addition to the Chicago family in Locked On Blackhawks with Jay Zawoski. So if you're a diehard Chicago sports fan and you want daily updates on each one of your teams, go ahead and subscribe to those shows. Those guys do a phenomenal job. Sean Sears, Jay Zawoski, and Lauren Cox. So make sure to give them a subscribe if you don't already. On top of here at Locked On Bulls, make sure you're subscribed to our show. Anywhere you get your podcast, we are sure to be there. Very excited to get into these voicemails, Matt. Happy Friday to you. Excited for the weekend. But before we jump into the voicemails, how you doing?
What up, Jordan? What up, Bulls Nation? Looking forward to a great weekend of sports ahead. Kind of actually looking forward to a bye week for the Bears. I guess I need a break from that roller coaster of a team. But
you and me both.
Oh, my God. But, you know, we got Bulls Pacers on deck for Friday night. You know, another division opponent after we saw Milwaukee on Monday. Thad Young's facing against his former team. Bulls, a little mini road game action here. So hopefully we will continue to see more of the positive signs we saw on Wednesday night with this offense, the up-tempo, the sharing of the ball, the high assist percentage, all those fun things. You know, who knows? We'll see a few new, bells and whistles from Jim Boylan and his guys. But, yeah, really, really excited for the weekend.
Without further ado, we're not going to mess around any longer. Let's just get straight to your guys' voicemails. Again, 331-979-1369, the place to drop us your voicemails. Let's see what we got today.
Hey, Jordan and Matt, what's up? Just calling the morning after our preseason game against the Pelicans. Got to say, I think there was a lot to like in that game. Our starters looked like we dominated the starters of the Pelicans. Pretty much most of that game, our ball movement on offense was incredible. Guys playing super unselfishly, making the extra pass. On defense, I thought our defensive rotation was equally impressive. I'm listening to the gas bags here on First Take talk about how the Bulls choked the game away, and I just can't wait to watch our team surprise some people this year. Obviously, we dominated the first and second groups for the Pelicans. Other than Zion, he missed one shot, but I think that might just happen sometimes this year. The new additions looked great. I've been watching the Fun With Us stuff. I'm buying all the Bulls propaganda. I know it was only one preseason game, but damn, we scored 70 points and a half last night. I think we probably scored 70 points in a couple of games last year. So I know it's preseason, but I really think things are working out. The guys look great. Just want to know your thoughts on that game. Thanks. Bye.
How many times did we not even see the Bulls score 107 points in four quarters last season? Because I think the answer is way too many times. I think he hits on this call like a lot of good positive things. The, you know, if you want to call it Bulls propaganda, Jordan, you can. Yeah, and myself, I was trying to temper my own excitement watching that game on Wednesday night. We'll see what we get tonight, but there's just a lot to be excited about when you saw, like he was saying, the ball moving, players move without the ball, unselfish offense, a lot of assists, all those things. It's like, and this is still coming from someone who thinks that the Bulls are going to fall short of being a playoff team this season. I am hyped. I'm a lot more hyped than I was before these preseason games started.
Yeah, and just to go off of buying into the Bulls propaganda stuff, man, I am suckered in too. On top of the Bulls media department doing a phenomenal job with these videos, man, it's making me very, very excited about this team. More excited than I've been the last couple of years, just going into the first start of the rebuild. But it's hard to deny the excitement that's going around here. Should this Bulls team be able to stay healthy and continue to play the way that they did in these first couple of preseason games? But I think that's spot on. That's something that we did 40 minutes yesterday, and we didn't even talk about the fact that the Bulls scored 71 and a half. He's totally right and spot on. There's probably games where the Bulls were going 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and they had just reached 70 points. So that's good to see. Is like, one thing that we were so concerned about Jim Boylen doing is slowing this offense down and bring it to a screeching halt, and it doesn't seem like that's going to be the case this year, especially in I know it's preseason, and I know a lot of scoring does happen, not a lot of defense is played, but still, for your starters to be out there and the 8 to 10 rotation players that you expect to play all the time to score, like you said, 107 through three quarters is phenomenal.
And look, some of that is a very bad Pelicans defense in a preseason game. You know, there is that, but, you know, there was, you know, a certain stretch, I want to say in the second quarter, when a all-shooters lineup, and I think it was when LaVine and Satoransky were in the backcourt, you had Otto at the three, you had Lowry at the four, and you had Cornette at the five. When those five were out on the court for a stretch of like 5 minutes, they put up 20 points in 5 minutes. Like, that is offensive firepower that we just did not see, did not have last season. And the Bulls pretty much failed to outscore their opponents last season when their own defense was so weak and failing. Even if the Bulls' defense doesn't improve by much this season, they can have the offensive firepower to outscore people this season. We saw that.
What's crazy, too, is the Bulls only had 12 fast break points in this game. Like, think about that. Like, we expect this Bulls team to get out and run, and it seemed like it in certain spots in this preseason game against the Pelicans, the Bulls were getting their hands in passing lanes. They were fighting for turnovers, and especially Zach LaVine, which this is going to be a lot of fun to watch him, is he's going to notice a lot of those times where guys get caught up dribbling too much, and either whether it's Satoransky or Dunn or Kobe White getting their hands in there, stealing the ball, and then they're out and running, and I think we're going to see that more often. So even with all of these points scored, they only had 12 fast break points throughout the entire game. So I expect that to go way up, way, way up. But you're right. I think playing a not-so-great Pelicans team, too, does kind of contribute to that. But this is going to be a different look to the offense than we've seen over the last couple of years, and I'm very excited for it.
A lot of threes, a lot of attacking the basket, and the death of the mid-range. At some point last night, Stacey King said something. He used the phrase, you know, like the lost art of the mid-range jumper at some point. You know, I think Otto knocked down one last night when he had gotten an offensive rebound and found himself open, like somewhere around the, you know, the left elbow. But it, like, this Bulls team just took way too many mid-range jumpers last season, and that is not how you win in today's NBA. They took, what, 37 or 38 threes last night and hit, you know, hit a clip of about 37, 38% of them. And they also, you know, whether it was Zach LaVine or Kobe or whoever, attacking the basket, using a lot of ball movement to get good looks inside at the basket. That's how they got to play. And it's going to look a lot different in a positive way for the Bulls fans who suffered through last season.
Second chance points are going to be huge for the Bulls, too. And I already noticed when Thomas Satoransky and Cornette and some of these other newer pieces to the Bulls are on the floor, they're giving the Bulls an opportunity. Same thing with Kobe White, too. they're giving the Bulls a second opportunity on offense by grabbing rebounds, by giving that little extra bit of effort to try to get the ball, especially if they miss a shot. So continue to keep your eye on that throughout preseason, is how the Bulls are getting second chance points and which guys are giving that little bit of extra effort on the offensive side of the ball to allow for points to be scored. I don't have the number in front of me, but I'd be curious to see over the course of the first two games what the Bulls' second chance points were, because they should be high compared to what we saw last year. But thanks for the call, 309. Appreciate it. I think we feel the same exact way you do. Let's move on to the next voicemail.
Hey, Jordan. Hey, Matt. This is Derek here. Long-time listener, first-time caller. But I just want to say that I just got done watching the Pelicans game, and I know it's the preseason, but what just happened? Lauri Markkanen, what's going on with him? He's my favorite Bull of this team, and I say that not being a legacy fan of the Bulls. I started being a fan of the Bulls the first year of Rondo and Wade, also their only year. But my opinion comes of that of I don't really expect much. I appreciate that they're underdogs. But this is Lauri Markkanen's third year, and this is still what we're getting from him. I'm not liking what I'm seeing at this point, and I'm not sure how much longer we can really give him to develop without looking for other options. And I know I'm saying this clearly being upset after a loss, but come on, like, it's supposed to be Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen, and we're just not getting what I feel like we should be at this point with Lauri Markkanen. And as I said, you know, he's my favorite Bull of this team, but I'm a team guy. I'm a fan of the Bulls above any player. And if he's not pulling through, I think maybe by mid-season we need to figure things out. I'd love to hear your all's thoughts about this.
All right. Hey, thanks for the call, Derek. You share the same concerns I think Matt and I do. The first two preseason games that we saw, if you listen to our episode yesterday, we talked specifically about that. It's just, you know, whether it's Lowry not being aggressive on his own and getting involved, especially early, but in stretches where he just seems to kind of disappear on the floor, it's like they go back and forth, like 6 to 8 possessions on the floor, and you wouldn't even notice Lowri Markkanen's out there because he's not touching the ball. He's not anywhere near any of these plays. So I don't know if that's a combination of things. If it's somebody's got to tell Lowry, you know what, you just got to start being aggressive, man. You got to demand the ball, call for the ball at times on offense, and also get yourself involved on defense. I will say this, Lowry had a really nice block that turned into a transition dunk for LaVine last night, which was awesome to see. Those little things we need to see from Markkanen as well on the defensive side of the ball. But I'm kind of with Derek. I don't know if I'm not nearly where Derek is right now saying that we may need to make changes or find other options, because Lowry's still very young and still needs time to develop. And it's going to take some time, but I do agree it is a little concerning, at least in preseason, to see the nonchalant, uninvolved Lowri Markkanen, and maybe that'll change over the course of the next few games and leading into opening night.
Yeah. As you said, I mean, we talked about this on Thursday's show after seeing another somewhat passive performance from Lowri on Wednesday. Jordan and I share your concerns, Derek. However, as you said, you know, I don't think we're hoping that year three is a big breakout year for Lowri. And in order for him to do that, you know, first and foremost, he'll need to stay healthy and hopefully put together a season where he can play at least 70 games. Because we haven't seen that from him yet. But there is some level of passiveness that we're seeing that is not great. I will say, though, that it's wise to remind ourselves how young Lowri is still. And the Lowri that we're seeing in these preseason games, the Lowri that we see this season, is not Lowri hitting his ceiling that's lower than we all thought or wanted it to be. NBA players in their prime typically have their prime years from about 27 to 32. maybe you push that up a year and say 26-31. But still, that means Lowry is 3 or 4 seasons away from hitting the beginning of his prime. And he can build on his game a lot in the days and games and seasons to come. I agree. Right now, there is some level of concern based on the lack of aggression from Lowry. Absolutely, I share that concern. But I am still trying to be patient.
10 for 24 so far through preseason, Lowry Markkanen is. He scored 14 points in the opener against the Bucks, and then he scored 16 against the Pelicans in that second game. And I'm with you too, Matt. Like, Lowry is not going to turn till 23 until the end of this season. He turns 23 in May of 2020. So exactly. I'm exactly with you too. Is patience with him as well. I think we expected a lot, especially because we didn't have a whole ton of talent the first 2 years, especially with guys being injured as well. We expected a lot and we saw some decent stuff from him. But I think that's also going to be a factor too, is don't put negatives on Lowry Markkanen just because there's more shooters around this Bulls team now. Like, we have added a lot of other offensive firepower to this team. And while that might diminish some of the looks that Lowry Markkanen gets early on, this is more about guys getting into the right spots and taking the right shots. So I don't think the Bulls, and I don't think Lowry Markkanen's used to having 3, 4, 5, 6 shooters at a time be able to help him out. He doesn't feel like he needs to do everything. But at the same time, I don't want him to turn into feeling like that means he can be passive for 5, 6 minutes while he's out on the floor. So I think it's going to be just a balance of Lowry learning how to play with some veteran guys now and guys that are actually competent in shooting the basketball. So I would say don't be worried. I would say have some patience, and I think things will turn around. Just have a little bit of patience with Lowry.
And I think another thing to remind yourself, not only that Lowry is young, but, I mean, he was a very young rookie who came in and blew us all away as a starter because he was forced into the role of a starter. We were not anticipating the Markkanen coming out party at the Garden in the early stages of his rookie year. That's not something that we thought would happen. Bobby and Nico got in a fight. One got suspended. The other got sent to the hospital. And that forced us into being pleasantly surprised by how good Lowry was as a rookie. And I think because of that, we have come to expect more from him. And maybe the expectations are a little too high that we're going to see these exponential jumps from Lowry year to year in the beginning of his career. I don't necessarily think that that's fair to him because I think we forget that a lot of the time.
How about that dunk Lowry had, though? Against the Pelicans too. I don't remember who the feed was from. I think maybe Cornette, but he went up real strong to the basket too and absolutely hit a great slam. So there are moments where Lowry, things that he wouldn't do last year, he was doing already in preseason. So there's things that we can touch on that are positives with him too as well. So I think it's just having patience with him, but appreciate the call. Appreciate the opinion as well.
Matt, Jordan, the CBS man, Jesus Christ. I'm sitting here watching the Turnover Olympics. In honor of the Bulls playing the Pelicans today, I turned over your phone number like 5 times on the way in. I have seen some of the most atrocious ball handling I have ever seen. I know this is the preseason, but Jesus Christ, if this is what we're going to have to watch all season. You guys remember when I called in and we were talking about the wing? If Wendell Carter doesn't come back and play like a perennial all-star, this is going to be the coldest winter ever watching these Bulls. I'm not seeing anything. Luke Kornet is going to have to go 100% from three for the entire season for us to sniff the bottom of the league. Oh, my God. Tell me I'm not the only one who's saying this. My head hurts. I have to go.
That's funny. He must be talking about when Dunn was in the game at stretches, and they did have a handful of turnovers. DVS, thanks for the call. I love hearing from DVS. We hear from him once in a while, but I will say maybe I don't share the same sentiment, but I do remember throughout the Pelicans game, especially the Bulls making careless turnovers. I think I was more angry about the careless turnovers than I was about the amount of turnovers that were going on, because those careless turnovers turned into easy buckets for the Pelicans on the opposite side. There was five or six times where the Pelicans had easy, easy transition buckets and guys were getting chased down, and the one was by Kobe White especially, but I think that's going to get cleaned up. But again, it is. It's those young guys making mistakes, making boneheaded mistakes that can't happen. Chris Dunn making terrible turnovers. Zach LaVine, even at times, he had two turnovers last night. I'm like, dude, eliminate those turnovers and you have a perfect game. He had one pass that he tried to make to the inside that just didn't work to Felicio. He had another one too, but I'm with him. Clean up the turnovers as well, and I think we're going to see the Bulls handedly beat teams, but it has to come with guys, especially the young guys, taking care of the ball.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for whatever reason, we saw a surprisingly low turnover total in the Bulls' first game against Milwaukee. They only were credited with 11 turnovers in that game, and you would have expected to see more. Milwaukee, for their own right, turned it over 25 times. Milwaukee still won the game and poured in 122 or whatever, but they, you know, they more than doubled the Bulls' turnovers, and then you see the Bulls turn the ball over 19 times against New Orleans in their second game. So, you know, I think one of those sloppy turnover kind of games was coming, because it's the preseason. Everybody, I mean, you know, this is not a Bulls problem. This is NBA preseason, and what NBA preseason looks like, you're going to get some slop. This is the first real five-on-five action against opponents who aren't themselves that these guys have seen in, you know, 6 months. So, yeah, it's going to happen. And, you know, I noticed that, you know, he left that voicemail Wednesday evening at 7:32 p.m. Central Time, which is right when that game was still getting underway and things were still pretty sloppy. But then the Bulls kind of found their groove, and they went from being a little bit sloppy to having one of the best assist percentage performances we've seen them put on in a long, long time. 24 assists on 30 made buckets in the first half. 38 assists on 49 made buckets for the game. Yes, you want to see important players handling the ball cut down on their turnovers, whether that be Zach or Satoransky or Chris Dunn or Kobe White or whomever. But I think right now it's not a giant concern of mine.
I would agree. I think the only time it's going to become a concern is if those turnovers turn into easy buckets and that ends up costing you at the end of the game, especially if you're playing close games. Like, a Pelicans team should not have 27 points off of turnovers against you. And a lot of that could have came in that fourth quarter where the scrub squad was out there, too. I'd have to go back and look to see how many turnovers there was in that last 8 minutes of the game. But yeah, I would say eliminating the opportunity for the opponents to have that many points off of turnovers, I think will only help this Bulls team. And again, I think that a number isn't that high should the Bulls have kept their rotation players out there for that fourth quarter. So I would say it's not that big of a concern right now, but keep an eye on it, I would say. And same thing with Chris Dunn. Chris Dunn, Kobe White got to handle the ball better. Thomas Satoransky at times got to handle the ball better as well. So don't get crazy with the dribbling and make smart passes. And I think this team has improved to do that. We just need those other rotation pieces to be able to do that as well. Eliminate those dumb turnover mistakes, and I think that's going to help the Bulls a ton.
Yeah, I mean, just real quick, as you mentioned, the points off turnovers. So the Bulls as a team total were credited with 21 turnovers. The Pelicans had 20. Pelicans scored 27 points off 21 Bulls turnovers. Bulls only scored 15 off of 20 Pelicans turnovers. So hopefully you minimize the turnovers, but hopefully you also minimize the damage of your turnovers so that you know your opponent isn't, you know, getting almost double the points that you guys are getting when your team is the one creating the turnovers. Some of that will have to be Jim Boylan really harping on transition defense when you do commit those turnovers. So we've seen some nice individual performances from guys, whether it be, you know, Satoransky or Kobe White, who have made nice plays after committing a turnover to get back on defense and make a play, but that's got to be all five guys whenever that turnover happens.
Would just like to mention too as well, first two games as far as offense and defensive rating go, I don't buy too much stock into this because, again, it's preseason, but that first game, the Bulls' offensive rating was 100.9 and their defensive rating was a 108.9 for a net rating of -8. Not too great. But against that Pelicans team, offensive rating of 110.6 and a defensive rating of 111.4 for a net rating of just under even. So at 0.8. negative 0.8. So that's good to see. It's good to see an improvement there as well. It's good to see that defensive rating being very, very low as well. We talked about games last year that the Bulls had. Their defensive rating was over 120. Like, you just can't have that. You won't win games. You get blown out by 30 when your defensive rating's that high. But it's also good to see the Bulls not in double digits as far as their offensive rating goes. We saw a lot of games last year and a lot of quarters last year where that happened as well. So thanks for the call, DVS. I think I would say, let's get a bigger sample size before we maybe freak out. Let's take the next voicemail.
What's up, guys? You know, so I saw the first preseason game. I'm trying to figure out why Felicio played so many minutes, man.
What was Felicio doing?
I'm not sure.
It's crazy when you got, they should have started Gafford and, you know what I'm saying, get new guys shooting. Like saying, but why? I still don't understand why Felicio playing so many minutes.
You ain't no Michael George.
And I think we're going to regret. I drafted Michael Porter Jr. Me, he looked pretty good. And how we look at it today, Wendell Carter's going through a lot of injuries. So what you guys think? You think we're going to regret not drafting Michael Porter? Love your show.
Real quick, Matt, let's talk about Michael Porter Jr. We finally seen him in an NBA game. I like what I see from him, but I don't think that the Bulls should necessarily have buyer's remorse on Wendell Carter Jr. and passing on Porter. There's a reason why they passed on him on draft night. What was that, 2 years ago now? There's a reason why they did that, and it's not short-term spurts like he's showing right now coming off of an injury, but it's going to be that long-term health. We already talk about one of the biggest weaknesses of this Bulls team is the fact that none of them can stay healthy consistently, at least over these last 3 or 4 years. So I personally don't think that the Bulls are going to have buyer's remorse on Wendell Carter Jr. and wishing they would have taken Michael Porter Jr. And I hope Michael Porter Jr. has a good career, because that Nuggets team is going to be unbelievable if he gets anywhere near his ceiling.
Yeah, you know, it's exciting to see MPJ, you know, putting some moves together and making the rounds on NBA Twitter vids and stuff, and happy for him and hope he, you know, has a great career. But I'm with you, man. I mean, it's not like just the Bulls passed on MPJ 2 years ago. What, like 13 other teams passed on him before the Nuggets finally said, all right, risk versus reward, let's go. I mean, there were medicals, and the medicals were shared with the Bulls first, and then the Bulls shared them with other teams, because remember the whole Mark Bartlestein client connection. The Bulls got a first-hand look at those medicals and said, this don't look good. And so now to say, well, look at that, after a redshirt freshman year, redshirt rookie year, look at MPJ out there hooping, and meanwhile, Wendell Carter's on the shelf with a sore ankle or a bruised tailbone or whatever it is, and he missed the, you know, 30-some games of his rookie year with an injured thumb. And okay, but none of those things were on Wendell's medical report when they drafted him. His medical report, other than that, you know, sports hernia injury that was giving him problems since his, you know, like, you know, high school years that they just fixed this offseason. Other than that, Wendell, crystal clear. Michael Porter Jr.'s medicals, not crystal clear. So I think it's just, you're not doing yourself any favors with that hindsight bullshit to say, did we make a mistake not drafting Michael Porter Jr.? No. And that doesn't mean you can't root for the kid and hope he has a great career. And also, part of you, you can, if you want to, wonder, well, what might have been if MPJ were on this Bulls roster? Personally, I don't like wasting my time with that stuff, because it's all fiction. It doesn't do you any good to wonder what might have been. All it's going to do is make your heart hurt. So, to me, it's not an issue.
One thing I will say about Carter, too, is I could give a shit less if he plays in any of these preseason games. As long as he's healthy and ready to go on opening night, that's the most important thing for me. And really, I know there's been a little bit of chatter around Bulls Twitter talking about Carter's overall health and the longevity of him, like, especially with all of these injuries kind of stacking up. Look, I would say let's evaluate what's going to happen throughout this season. If he continues to miss time, a bunch of time, with injuries, then maybe we have a little bit more cause for concern. But I think it's too early for that right now. And I think Carter's a tough-ass kid, too. So if it is to the point where he is having problems with staying healthy, I mean, we've had that problem with a lot of these other guys too. But I don't think I have buyer's remorse just because MPJ is finally healthy and he's on the floor and this is the first time we've seen him. And to the point about Cristiano Felicio, here's my only logical explanation of why they have him starting right now is they wanted to see what Thaddeus Young and Luke Kornet and Daniel Gafford look off the bench where they would actually be playing throughout the regular season. Am I wrong in saying that? Like, they didn't want to stick Luke Kornet or Daniel Gafford or Thaddeus Young into that starting lineup and kind of mess everything up, or at least see what they're going to see in the regular season in true spots. I think that's why they started Felicio. And also, too, preseason's about seeing what you have out of these guys, and you need to play the most out of them. But I will say, to Felicio's credit, he was a non-disaster out there in the two games he's played. Had some nice finishes, so I'll give him that. I don't know if it's the goggles or not, but he did have a nice, really nice dunk, like assertive-ass dunk against the Pelicans. So I'll give him a little bit of credit there.
No, he didn't have a dunk against the Pelicans. He finished with 1 point, one of two from the free throw line. You're thinking about Milwaukee.
I'm thinking about Milwaukee. He missed a dunk, a nice feed from Denzel where he did end up missing a dunk and he went to the free throw line. You're right.
No, Felicio has looked like trash. He is the trash that we know him to be. Sorry, and it's nothing personal, but he just can't play. And you are spot on, 100% accurate with your assessment of Boylan doesn't want to mess up the rest of his rotation by bumping everybody up a spot. So you put Felicio in as your fake Wendell to start the game so that Boylan could get a better picture and understanding of when he wants to go small and play Thad, when he wants to go small and push Markin into the five, when he wants to put Gafford in there, when he wants to put Kornet in there. And it would have done him no good to just shuffle all that up, because then what you learn in the preseason has no effect on what actually happens when you get Wendell in there. I was astonished how many Bulls fans were freaking out about Felicio starting again in their second preseason game. Oh my God, Gafford totally earned those minutes over Felicio, and holy crap, we got Kornet back now too. It's like, start Gafford or Kornet. Why the hell is Felicio? Guys, you're flipping out and giving yourself a heart attack over nothing. Nothing. Somebody even saying to me, like, well, like, I don't have enough faith in Jim Boylan to know that he shouldn't give Felicio any minutes this season. I'm sitting here saying, really? Like, really? Like, shut up. What, do you actually honestly think that Jim Boylan is that dumb? Because if so, then you're just being an ass. You're just being an ass to be an ass. No, he is not planning on starting Felicio if Wendell is hurt. No! No!
Could you imagine that?
Assuming that some combination of Wendell, Gafford, Kornet, Thad Young, and Markkanen are healthy this season, you are about to see 82 DNP CDs from Felicio. Book it.
Unless the Bulls are up 30 with like 5 minutes left, he'll stick Felicio out there just so he doesn't get anybody else hurt. But I think I'm with you too. And the other freakout too is the Bulls losing that the lead that they had. They were up 23, I think, with 8 minutes left in the fourth against the Pelicans at one point, and then ended up blowing that entire lead. Who gives a shit? Do you really expect any of those guys that were out there for the final 8 minutes in that fourth quarter to play any significant time if the Bulls are in a close game? Absolutely not. Should the Bulls have kept their starters or their rotation players out there, the Bulls would have had their foot on their throat. They would have won by 20+. So don't concern yourself with what happened at the end of that preseason game against the Pelicans. It was disappointing that the rotation, or like the back end of the bench and the guys that were trying to make the roster, ended up blowing a 21-point lead in a matter of 8 minutes. Sure, that's a little concerning, but who cares in the grand scheme of things? So don't freak out about that too. I think, you know, it's too early in the season to be giving yourself heart attacks and strokes as a Bulls fan. You won't last till December at this point. So I'll just take a deep breath. It's all going to be okay. And like you said, Felicio is not going to start. Jim Boylan's not that dumb. So let's all just take a deep breath. It's going to be okay.
It is. I would say real quick, though, I wouldn't mind if we see Boylan actually close out a game with his closing rotation once in these five games. I know, you know, people have different preferences about preseason, whether or not you should risk injury and all that stuff. But I would like to see, and honestly, like, you know, ideally a close game. And maybe it's, you know, tonight against the Pacers. If the Bulls are in a situation this preseason where they can win a game, close out a game where they've been leading, where they've been in it, and just so we can get a look at what Boylan's plans are as far as his closing lineup. I would like to see that once before the real games start, because we were a team that didn't know how to win last year, and we're going to try and have to figure out how to win this year.
I imagine we probably see that against the Hawks in that final game, because the Bulls will have just about a week off before their opening night against the Hornets. So maybe we do see it there, where Jim Boylan just plays his 10 or 11 guys that he's going to have in that rotation, and we see them actually close out a game, which that'd also be a really fun preseason game to watch. The Bulls and Hawks could be, I'm hoping at least, that this could end up turning into a small little rivalry, because we did have it last year, going back and forth in those overtime games. But I'm with you. I want to at least see one game in this preseason where they close out and they have their closeout lineup in and see what those guys can do.
Dude, Coby White versus Trae Young.
It can be a lot of fun.
You know? You got Jabari over there now.
I forgot
little Jabari versus Bulls rivalry.
I forgot about that. Man.
Jabari barking at Jim Boylan after he makes a bucket going back down the court. Oh, it would be beautiful.
They don't pay players to play defense.
Before we take the last voicemail of the day, and again, you can hit us up at 331-979-1369. Just want to remind you guys, Indochino is the world's largest made-to-measure menswear brand. Start your style upgrade now with $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when entering the promo code LOCKEDON at checkout. That's $30 off your total purchase of $3.99 or more at Indochino.com, promo code LOCKEDON. Let's get to our last voicemail.
Hey, Jordan. What's up, Matt? Just wanted to pose a question to you guys. Heard this question asked on ESPN one year, and I think it fits true with every NBA team out there. What team has the best chance of not only posing the best threat to the Bulls to win the eighth seed or even better in the playoffs, and also what player, not with the last name, Markkanen, Levine, or Porter, has to have a stellar year in order for them to overcome that other team? It's often easy to overlook the other players that fly under the radar, I believe, instead of focusing on the top two or three players on your team, so that you got to know who's going to have a stellar season in order for them to succeed. So thanks for taking my question, and thanks for making the highways less boring. Go Bulls.
All right. Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. And thanks for listening, too. I'm glad that we can entertain you. I know a lot of you listen to our podcast while you're driving. We have a ton of people who work overnights as well. So appreciate that we can give you guys 30 to 45 minutes every single day, kind of entertain you and also inform you about the Bulls. But as far as this question goes, I think this is a really good one. We haven't talked about this a whole ton. But Matt, let's start with the first part is, which team in the East do you think is going to give the Bulls the most fight trying to make that last playoff seed, or maybe the seventh or the eighth seed? Where do you see, which team do you see fighting with the Bulls the most to try to make that spot, should there be a playoff battle going into February and March?
Well, you just mentioned them, man, and it's a team that we'll see in our final preseason game. It's Atlanta. To me, you know, you have your tier in the East, Philly and Milwaukee, top tier, and then some combination of, you know, Toronto, Boston, maybe, you know, Indiana and Miami in there. So that's six teams right there. And then you're going to have the Bulls, Orlando, Atlanta. I feel like I'm missing somebody, maybe like one other team that are going to be like three or four teams vying for the seventh and eighth seeds. And to me, the team that people are kind of sleeping on is the Hawks and what kind of jump they might be able to make this year. And then as far as the second part of his question about, you know, other than the obvious names, who needs to really have a strong season for the Bulls to keep themselves in that fight for a playoff spot? It's a guy that we were just talking about a minute ago. It's Wendell. You know, I know that there's a little bit of concern with these minor nagging injuries that are keeping him out of the preseason. We're hoping that it's just nothing and it's precautionary, but we need to see Wendell take a big jump this year. I'm not worried about Satoransky. I think he's going to fit in beautifully. I'm not worried about Thad Young. Not worried about any of the newcomers or any of the other holdovers from last season. Everybody, it seems, knows their role. Wendell having a big jump or not I think is going to make or break the Bulls this season.
It's a good call. I think that the Bulls are going to be fighting. Like you said, I think there's going to be a massive fight for teams for those finals two spots. Specifically, I think it's going to be Orlando. It's going to be Detroit. It's going to be Miami, and it's going to be the Bulls.
Ah, Detroit. That's the one I wasn't remembering.
I don't think Atlanta is quite there yet, and maybe I'm wrong about Atlanta right now. I thought they played really well last year, but I still think...
Down the stretch, too. Like, their record in the back, like, 30 games, they look pretty darn good.
I think they need Trae Young to build off of what he did in those that last 30, 35 games of the season to continue to contend. But I still think even with the additions the Bulls had this year, I think they've leapfrogged Atlanta at least a little bit from just from what we're seeing, if the Bulls can stay fully healthy. But I think Detroit and Orlando are going to be the two teams the Bulls are really going to be fighting with. Detroit should be better, but still, like, they upgraded a couple of different pieces, but for the most part, their team stays the same, and they just squeaked in at the eighth seed. You'll see Charlotte drop off. The Wizards aren't going to be a part of this. Atlanta, I think, could hang around for a while. But again, I think it's going to come down to the Magic. It's going to come down to Miami, and it's going to come down to Detroit all and the Bulls all fighting for two playoff spots out of four teams. You mentioned Wendell, too. I'm with you 100% on Wendell Carter. I think we need him to at least be healthy and play for the majority of the season. We need that defensive side from him, too. That's what we talked about in that second preseason game. That was what was missing, is rim protection and also just the ability to have a guy that can pass down low. We talked about Cornette. We talked about Thaddeus Young being able to do that. And same thing with Markkanen. But I think in that starting unit, you definitely need Wendell in there. We miss him on the defensive side a ton. So I'm with you. But if I had to go to one other person to talk about really quickly, and I know some of you might laugh at me for this, but think about it for a second. I think Denzel Valentine needs to have a decent year, too. We need solidified shooting off the bench. You need somebody who can score off the bench. If Kobe White is going to struggle at any point in part of this season and not being able to score, who else is your guys that are going to come off the bench and get you 10, 15 a night? Who is that? I mean, it could be Thaddeus Young.
Yeah.
It could be him, but you also need a guard that's going to be able to step out and take some shots. So if there's anything to be concerned with, I have a concern, is that secondary bench being able to score. And so for me, I think Denzel Valentine's going to be an important piece to be a guy that maybe is a spark plug coming off that bench alongside Kobe White. And maybe Kobe White has some rookie struggles. You're going to need a secondary guy to come off the bench, especially a guard, to be able to knock down some shots.
Yeah.
So
I think
I'm with you, though, on Wendell.
I would agree. I think Denzel, if he's going to be a part of this rotation, is important. I know we like to give him a hard time. I know I certainly like to give him a hard time just because we're coming off a season where he played 0 of 82. And right now in the preseason, he looks like he's not in game shape. So it is important, though, especially the shooting. I don't want Denzel to try to do too much. I want him to play his role, which is going to be knock down shots off the bench. That is your role. Don't get it confused. And especially in that second unit, you know, especially like we were talking yesterday about how we're not really comfortable with Kobe White taking a bunch of threes yet. He doesn't seem to have that NBA three locked in. Thad Young has never been a real threat behind the three-point line, like hovering around 30% for his career. The other real shooter you have in the second unit right now is Luke Cornette. Like, outside of that, Denzel is the other guy who you can actually rely on to knock down threes in your second unit. So it is very important that he stays healthy enough to be able to contribute those, you know, 9 to 12 points a night knocking down shots. I agree.
One other thing I will quickly mention, how fun would it be if the Bulls came down to the last 3 weeks of the season and they're battling with Miami for that final playoff spot? A Jimmy Butler-led Miami team versus this Bulls team trying to squeak out an 8-seed playoff spot. I think that would be a whole hell of a lot of fun to pay attention to in the final few weeks.
Oh, God. I mean, yes, it would be. Absolutely. It would also drive me absolutely crazy. Let's see, when is their last game against the Heat in the regular season? I'm working backwards.
It would be Wednesday, March 18th is the last game they'll play against Miami.
March 18th.
And they actually have two games.
Yeah, at home, March 18th.
They play Miami Saturday, March 14th. They play Boston that Sunday, and then they play Miami again at home on that Wednesday. And the Bulls have about 10 games after that. Yeah, about 10, 12 games after that.
Could be a couple of very important games. Although, I'll tell you what. I think at that point in the season, Miami may not have themselves a playoff position locked, but pretty damn close to it. I think that that Miami team is going to be 5 or 6, not fighting for 7 or 8. That's my guess as far as how I see the East shaking out right now.
Do you think
now.
Orlando's not going to have as impressive a season as they did last year, or do you think it's Detroit that's going to kind of fall back?
I think either of those is certainly possible. I don't think either of those teams got significantly better in the offseason. I can hear the Rose stands yelling at me from here. Did you see Rose's fourth quarter for Detroit last night? Yes, I did. Happy for him. But, yeah, like, maybe if one of those teams falls off, it's either Detroit because Blake and or Drummond can't stay healthy and on the floor, or it's Orlando because they just really didn't do a whole lot to bolster their roster in the offseason. But I see Miami more easily making the playoffs than both Orlando and Detroit.
Yeah, and I mean, Blake Griffin had damn near a MVP caliber type of season, too, for that Detroit team, and they just squeaked out an 8 seed last year. So I think he's going to have a repeat performance on top of Drummond being better, top of Derrick Rose being able to contribute, and any of those other role pieces, too. So I'm probably with you. I think Miami's a little bit better, but they're going to have some growing pains of themselves to trying to figure out how they mesh that entire roster together. But yeah, I think it's going to be interesting coming down to the last stretch of the season. And when we talked about the Bulls' schedule as well, the Bulls have a very tough schedule in the final 3 weeks of the season. They're playing a lot of teams that we expect to be in the playoffs. So it's going to be tough. It's going to be a tough end for this Bulls team, especially if they're chasing one or two games or they only have a lead on that 8 seed for up to one or two games. I think it's going to be very tough at that end of the season for the Bulls to squeak it out.
Right. And not to mention that West Coast road trip towards the end there. At Jazz, at Nuggets, at Suns, at Lakers, at Clippers. Yikes.
And no matter what Bulls team it is, they always play like shit on the West Coast.
Yeah, they tend to do that. And then you're home, you finish home Nets, home Magic, and then at Celtics. So it's a brutal final 8 games of the regular season.
We'll see. Yeah, it's shaping up to be a very exciting season. I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls, though. Thanks for hanging out with us all week long, Bulls fans. We've got 2 doses of games, of preseason games this weekend. Pacers tonight. And on Sunday, they play, is it the Raptors on Sunday? At Raptors. So we'll have that game on Sunday as well. So no Bears this weekend, so maybe you can pay your close attention to not only MLB playoffs, but some Bulls preseason action. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Peck. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line. You want to drop us a voicemail with your thoughts, 331-979-1369, the place to do that. Or on Twitter, shoot us your questions. Anything you got for us at Locked On Bulls. Wanted to mention the last couple of episodes, at the back end of the episode, we've been playing a 5-minute preview from one of our newest Chicago shows here on the Locked On Podcast Network. That's Locked On Blackhawks. Jay Zawoski is your host. He is an executive producer over at 670 The Score here in Chicago. So he does a great job covering the Blackhawks. So if you like the quality content you're getting from this show, from Locked On Bears, from Locked On Cubs, I promise you we're adding another high-quality show in Locked On Blackhawks. We're very excited about the launch of our newest sports channel covering the NHL. As you know, listening to this show, we feature local experts covering the biggest news, and now we're covering the ice with daily hockey podcasts. Check out the upcoming season preview for Locked On Blackhawks and find your favorite NHL team on our website, lockedonpodcast.com/NHL. We'll have more NBA news for you on Monday. We'll have plenty of thoughts about the Bulls' 2 preseason games this weekend and so much more next week. So we'll give you a 5-minute preview. Make sure to stick around and listen to Jay Zawoski and also go subscribe to his show along with Lauren Cox at Locked On Bears and Sean Sears at Locked On Cubs. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful weekend. We'll be back on Monday with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
I thought it was a real positive.
You ain't no Michael Jordan.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.
Hey, this is Jay Zawoski, host of Locked On Blackhawks, and welcome to my Locked On Blackhawks season preview. It's going to be a very interesting year for the Chicago Blackhawks. A lot of question marks, a lot of hope based on how last season ended. So in my mind, there are five keys to the Blackhawks season this year. Number one, they need repeat performances from Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane. In case you missed it, they both had career years in 2018-2019. Toews had 35 goals and 81 points in 82 games. That's a career high. Patrick Kane scored 44 goals and 110 points. Despite that, the Hawks did not make the playoffs. I mean, if you'd told me before the season began that both those guys were going to have career years, I would have said playoffs, 100% certainty, but it didn't happen. However, the 2019-20 Blackhawks, the roster, at least on paper, is significantly improved. But if either of these two stars, Jonathan Toews or Patrick Kane, have a significant drop-off, it might just offset those roster improvements. So it's unlikely that Toews is going to duplicate those numbers, but it's encouraging to see that he's still capable of an offensive season like that. With the additions of Andrew Shaw and Zach Smith, both guys that can win faceoffs that are right-handed, they could take some of the penalty kill pressure away from Jonathan Toews, and that could benefit his offensive game. If he can stay in the 70-plus point range, I think the Hawks will be fine. The second key is continued growth from Alex DeBrincat and Dylan Strome. DeBrincat, who just signed a three-year contract extension, is coming off a 41-goal sophomore season. He's 21 years old. To say he could score 50 goals is not a stretch. He was impressive last season, but there were some times where he would go through some extended goalless streaks. With the Blackhawks added depth offensively, he'll probably find himself skating with better players more consistently. He will start the season with Dylan Strome as his center. Those two are best friends off the ice. They found immediate chemistry on the ice, so I would expect those two to be paired together early. And speaking of Strome, when the Hawks got him from Arizona last season for Nick Schmaltz, he immediately started contributing. In his 58 games with the Blackhawks, he had 51 points. If he matches that pace this season, that'd give him 72 points in 82 games. That means the Hawks would have at least four forwards, Toews, Kane, DeBrincat, and Strome, capable of 70-plus point seasons. It's hard to imagine a team with that much forward depth missing the playoffs. The next key is improving the defense, and to me, this is the biggest one. The Hawks' defense can't be worse than they were last year, can they? They were horrible. They had the worst penalty kill in the league, only stopping 72% of the power plays they faced. They allowed 3.5 goals per game. For reference, the Lightning had the league's best offense. They scored 3.89 goals per game. There's no way the Hawks' defense will be as bad as it was last season. They added two veteran, steady defenseman in Olli Maatta and Calvin DeHaan. And while Mata's coming off a down season with the Penguins, he's won two Stanley Cups and he's only 25 years old. I think that his best years are likely still ahead of him. As far as DeHaan goes, he's a traditional stay-at-home defenseman. He'll bring stability and leadership, and he can play all situations. I don't expect him to get a lot of power play time, but he should get some. So once Calvin DeHaan is healthy, he should plug right into the lineup and contribute. Now, the other keys to me, Kirby Dach and Adam Boqvist, the two Hawks' top prospects. Both those guys, in my opinion, should be on the roster to start the season. Boqvist will begin the year down in Rockford where he can hone his defensive game a little bit. Kirby Dach is either going to play in Chicago or in Saskatoon. There's no AHL for him because of the agreement the NHL and CHL have together, so the Hawks cannot send him to Rockford. So once he's finally healthy, he's going to get a look at the NHL level. They need both those guys to contribute probably for more than half of this NHL season. They also need a depth winger to emerge. Alex Nylander scored the Hawks' first goal of the season. That's an encouraging start. Dominic Kubalik was one of their better forwards throughout the preseason and has shown that he belongs at the NHL level. Nylander's got a higher ceiling, but a lower floor. Kubalik's got a lower ceiling, but he probably won't bottom out as much as Nylander could. Nylander could still be a bust. There's still that possibility that Alex Nylander is a bust, but after one game the Blackhawks have played so far, he looks pretty good, and he started the season on the top line, so that has to be encouraging for people watching the Hawks. Whatever happens, it's going to be a really exciting season. My name's Jay Zawoski. I am the host of Locked On Blackhawks on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.